Victoria got her degree at DePaul, and Ashley got her degree at Northwestern University, at the University of Chicago. But they're both kind of ecumenical, and that's what we like to see in the area of school health.
All right. Thank you so much for that introduction, and yay for everybody who came here on the last day to support us. We had a few more people trickle in. So I'm so happy to be here today and to start this conversation and discussion with you. Victoria and I will be presenting on improving chronic disease verification and medication access in the Chicago Public Schools. And I am an employee of Northwestern University. Victoria actually is jointly situated between Northwestern University and the Office of School Health and Wellness with the Chicago Public Schools. So we don't have any personal disclosures, but we do want to say that the asthma side of this project was funded through a community asthma grant through the Alliance for Research in Chicagoland Communities. The food allergy side of the project, which we will talk about since those are kind of the two main chronic diseases we are looking at in this study, was sponsored by Mylan, which is the maker of EpiPen. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on the Chicago Public Schools and the climate for chronic disease reporting. It's estimated that chronic conditions impact almost 25% of Chicago Public School students. As you all know, asthma is the most common chronic disease among students in general, and namely in the CPS system. Yet we're finding that it's the most underreported condition, or what we think is the most underreported condition. Same goes for food allergy, a chronic condition that is impacting our students and is also underreported. And furthermore, the Chicago Public School System knows how these diseases can impact students. They had the death of a student in 2010 from a food allergic reaction, and a lot of signs point back to not having strong school health systems overall. So that was really one of the impetuses to move forward with better planning. So the CPS, Office of School Health and Wellness, has recognized that underreporting and poor management of chronic diseases is a problem, and they actually are pretty progressive and have developed and passed several chronic disease policies, such as the district-wide asthma management policy, in an effort to try and improve disease reporting, verification, and management. And these policies are supposed to, at least in part, help reinforce proper reporting of chronic diseases. So you may be wondering, how does one actually ensure that a child's chronic condition is reported within the CPS system? And to better understand the reporting system, we have distilled it down into the following four steps. Step one is a parent would complete a student medical information form indicating the child has a chronic condition. Step two, parent obtains physician verification of the child's chronic condition and submits that information back to the school. Step three, parents provide school with a child's medication, so whether this is the inhaler or the epinephrine auto-injector. And step four, the parent's supposed to work with the school to set up an emergency action plan for the child. Which should be pretty easy, right? Exactly. Four steps is too many, and what we're up against is really CPS is a huge public school district. It's the third largest public school district in the United States. There are over, 650 operating public and charter schools that fall within CPS's mandate, which means that we're serving over 400,000 students, K-12. So in order to systematically assess the barriers to having every child with a chronic condition complete the disease reporting process, we took a community-based participatory research approach where we partnered with the Chicago Public Schools. As equal partners, we utilized some of the following key strategies to ensure that we would achieve our joint objectives. The first strategy, who is now a person, is that we decided to hire a joint NU-CPS research project coordinator that would intimately understand both the academic and community project needs. Do other people in the audience work in community academic partnerships? Yes, so you're very familiar with the issues on both sides, and we felt it was really important to have one person kind of be able to be the liaison between the systems to ensure we were moving forward in the right direction from both the academic side and the community side. We participated in a participatory budgeting process, so sat down at the table with the Office of School Health and Wellness and decided collectively, how are we spending our resources? How are we going to budget for this so that both sites could accomplish their work? And then what was most important is that we have biweekly communication meetings to make sure we're on the same page, to make sure on the academic side we're understanding the changes at the Office of School Health and Wellness, because there are many right now, in order to move forward. So during the development stages of this project, our team agreed on the following project objectives. Our goal is to determine physician-verified prevalence of asthma, food allergy, and diabetes, to examine barriers to chronic disease reporting and verification experienced by parents and school nurses, and to provide recommendations for barrier reduction, policy improvement, and increased policy compliance. So to meet our objectives, we partnered with 10 CPS schools, which are indicated by the stars on this map. CPS is actually organized into 14 elementary school networks, so we really wanted to try and be as geographically distributed as possible throughout the school system, because we understand that, you know, health changes by neighborhood, but it also health policies and compliance of schools really varies by schools within these specific networks. Here we reviewed student health work records, we conducted interviews and focus groups with parents and school nurses, and we administered parent surveys. Currently we are in the process of analyzing our quantitative and qualitative data, and I'm now going to turn it over to Victoria to discuss some of our preliminary results.
So one thing that's also important to note about this map is, as of last week, CPS will now be redistricted into 9 networks. So that's, we don't have an updated map because I don't think the district yet does either. So our first study objective was to determine asthma and food allergy prevalence in the Chicago Public Schools, and the way to do that is by examining our database. One thing that's really important to note is that a chronic condition can only be put into the database if there is a physician verification. So, after reviewing the database, we found that district-wide asthma prevalence was 4.5%. In order to look at parent-reported prevalence, we actually looked at the student medical information forms from our 10 partner schools. For that, we found that parent-reported asthma prevalence was 4.7%, meaning that the majority of the parents who originally reported their child's asthma were able to get physician verification. However, both of these numbers are still much lower than the pediatric national asthma prevalence of 9.5%, and they're also lower than other Chicago-based pediatric asthma studies. The food allergy picture is just a little bit different. The district-wide physician-verified food allergy prevalence was only 1%. However, when we looked at the student medical information forms, parent-reported food allergy prevalence was 3.6%. So this means that fewer parents who do report their children as having food allergies are obtaining that physician verification. Also, both numbers are still much lower than the national accepted food allergy prevalence of 8%. So we still have a long way to go to get our reported numbers to match the true prevalent numbers. So the second objective of our study was to look at the barriers that parents and school nurses face when going through this chronic disease reporting and verification process within CPS. To do this, we analyzed our focus groups, parent interviews, and school nurse interviews, and our results were also further supported by the parent survey that we administered to almost 300 parents across the district. However, those results are still forthcoming, and we're also not going to talk about that too much for the sake of time. So the three overarching barriers that we found were procedural inconsistency, a lack of parental knowledge, and school nurse availability. So the first barrier was procedural inconsistency. Parents reported inconsistencies within individual schools as well as across the vast district. Receiving the student medical information form, which is the first step in getting the whole process rolling, was not consistent across schools or even within schools. Some parents reported receiving the form, filling it out, and handing it back, and other parents had never seen the form at all. Follow-up after reporting the chronic condition was also inconsistent. Some parents were contacted by the school nurse. Other parents, you know, filled out that form and never heard anything about it again. Setting up action plans both for asthma and for food allergies was also inconsistent. Some parents were contacted to initiate plans, and some parents never had plans set up for their children. Parents also reported getting conflicting information from school staff. The second barrier was the lack of parental knowledge. Parents were unaware of the chronic disease management policies that CPS implemented a few years ago, and they were also not familiar with how chronic diseases are reported and verified. Parents had limited knowledge of the action plans, both why action plans are important and also how to go about setting up action plans. Parents were also unable to identify a point person to talk to about their child's chronic condition because school nurses and CPS are very thinly stretched and are not in school full time. Which takes us to our final barrier, school nurse availability. Parents were really concerned about administering medication to children when a school nurse is not there. They were also concerned about the general health and safety of the children when there was no school nurse on school grounds. School nurses reported being very concerned that they were unable to perform to their professional standards, and they really wanted to have more time to do the job they knew they wanted to do and were capable of doing if time allowed. The last 2 points are actually small snippets from the survey we took. Most parents cited that school nursing was very important, and they wanted schools to have the nurses there 5 days a week. So our third and final objective was to go through some of the recommendations to improve processes and ensure more policy adherence. In terms of procedural inconsistency, our recommendation is that the CPS Office of Student Health and Wellness needs to be more consistent in educating and training individual schools on these policies and processes. This could be done through creating a website that really further explaining all the processes, all the forms in one place, and then also more comprehensive school staff and school nurse trainings, so everyone is on the same page. Our second barrier, lack of parental knowledge, our recommendation is that both the Office of Student Health and Wellness and individual schools will need to increase health-related communication efforts targeting the parents. This could be done through individual school websites because most parents reported going to their school's website as opposed to the overall CPS website to find information for that particular school. And then also creating flyers or one-pagers or more comprehensive information that could be delivered at school events where parents are present, such as report card pickup days. And then to the third barrier of school nurse availability, we don't really have a recommendation per se to go along with that because unfortunately the Office of Student Health and Wellness does not oversee school nurse resources and cannot control how school nurses are allocated to individual schools. However, because this was such an overarching barrier to both parents and nurses, it was warranted that we mention it here. So I'm going to turn it back over to Ashley for concluding remarks. Thank you very much.
So our next steps in our future direction is right now we are really at the point where we're going to share our study findings with partner schools as well as CPS leadership. Just ask them what they think of how we're interpreting the data and if we've missed any barriers or key barriers along the way. From there, we're going to work on developing, we have a little bit of money left over to develop a pilot project where we will be able to develop, implement, and evaluate the project. So some things right now are just trying to even get that four-step system integrated into the parent portal or the CPS website so both nurses and parents actually even know all of the steps. But that will still be determined, and our community partners will help us determine what our pilot project will look like. We also just wanted to thank our co-principal investigators, especially the Office of School Health and Wellness, for inviting us to have a joint employee with them and kind of coming along for the ride. To Dr. Stephanie White, who's the chief health officer within the CPS school district, to all of our partner schools, parents, school nurses, and the children and youth with chronic diseases. So any questions?
Is there money to come up for these school nurses?
Oh, I wish I could say yes. And I wish.
Can they like get advanced practice nurses and then probably charge? Maybe you can do a third party repayment or something? Or?
At this point, I just know that there continues to be budget cuts across the district. And this year, there are even fewer nurses than there were last year. So it looks like the trajectory is actually going the opposite direction, which is really sad for our students.
And I think, yeah, even though there is funding, the bureaucracy of it is so many nurses retired last year and some left that they haven't even been able to replace those nurses, and they were already understaffed. So we keep mentioning it in hopes of bringing it to the forefront, but in terms of funding, I'm not sure.
I'm a little interested in your parental contact and the way that was done. Did you try and contact all parents, or did you focus your contact on just the parents who said, I have a child who has a problem, and how was that contact made?
So it was in different ways. We focused on the parents at specific schools that were a part of the study, and some of the parents were actually the advocates themselves that asked us to come to their schools, to talk to their principal school nurses, to be a part of the study. And then we worked through local school councils that maybe had like a health group or things like that. So the principals and the nurses helped us connect to with partners to try to recruit them to participate in our focus groups.
The follow-up is approximately how many parents were involved, because I mean the numbers who reported, and what was the crossover in terms of the number of parents who reported a food allergy or an asthma or chronic condition? I mean, how many cut across both of those groups?
Do you know that from the focus groups?
So for the focus groups, we conducted 5 focus groups. There were approximately 10 parents in each. And just due to some transcription, I think it was hard to really understand how many, exactly how many parents, but I would say it was pretty, half and half food allergy, half and half asthma. And then some, but you did have to be a parent with a child with a chronic condition to participate in the focus groups and in like a key informant interview.
Maybe I didn't ask my question correctly. I'm thinking of the total group, not just the people who participated in focus groups. Did you not try to get information to the total scope of the parents who reported a child with one of these two issues?
So across the entire district?
Yeah.
So our surveys, we went out on report card pickup day, and just due to the size of our team, we were really only able to hit our key partner schools. We haven't put a district-wide survey out.
Yeah, but no, I meant just in those schools that you, those 9 schools or whatever that you used. Did you get to all of the parents who reported these issues?
I have that information. If you'd like me to, I can gladly email it to you. I have it
I was just curious to see how you made that contact. Because a lot of times, the child's supposed to take stuff home.
Yeah.
And
right.
It stays in the child's pocket. The parent never sees it. And so when you mentioned a lot of the parents didn't see it.
Right.
And if you've got parents coming to focus groups, those are probably the parents who are going to go onto a website.
Right.
Right.
The
those
majority
the
of parents in any school are not going to that website.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'll just say from where I was in school at the report card pickup days, people with chronic conditions, a lot of them did stop by. I can't say we reached everyone. Some people were just like, I don't have time. I got to go to my kids' conference, and I'll take your survey, and that was that.
And you never saw them.
And other parents were like, do you even have a school nurse? What is this school policy? Yeah. Should I be answering no for everything? So, yeah, we kind of got what we could.
Another interesting point to the thing staying in the children's pockets or in their backpack was on the survey we asked questions about the ways in which parents would like to see the communication getting home. Parents said that the biggest barrier to the communication getting home was that the children just never delivered them. However, when we asked what their preferred method was, they still said they wanted them sent home in their backpack.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe you need to have a parental program that's called a backpack check.
Yeah.
There are several schools, independent school districts that are using LPI have somebody to provide medication and to take care of some patients.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have provided that recommendation at least to take care of some, I mean, it's not impaired.
Yeah.
At least. And for example, McAllen ISD, they really tried to get just registered persons. And they have been able to keep it up. But some other independent physicians, they have gone to MBAs or even Medicaid.
So we have, I mean, we have a proposal out right now to test like a community health worker, but within the school, a school health worker, to not do the job of a nurse, but to help with some of this administrative work. Because what we're finding is the nurses who should be practicing nurses are spending all their time entering forms, and they're not even all getting entered. So we are trying to figure that out, and whether or not with the Affordable Care Act with the school could get reimbursed for lay health workers or things like that to do this type of work, but very like preliminarily.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.